Blog Talk Radio.
Bill Kennedy talking.
How you guys doing?
Yeah.
Got a couple things to say real quick. One is, I understand people coming into the show.
Comments are okay.
Yeah, comments are okay. But if you got really got something to say, I have an email address. I also put my phone number out there. I'm not afraid to hide. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm putting myself out there, and if you guys need to feel you need to vent something, or you don't like something, or you feel we don't doing it, not doing it the way we should do it for you, we're doing this for everybody, not us, not the guy next door, not the guy across the street. We're doing this because we're a couple of bikers who are tired of the bullshit.
And the politics. That's what I'm picking up already.
And the politics, absolutely.
One organization telling us what to do, how we should do it. We're not doing it the way they want us to do it. We don't care. We're going to get the message out. We think the message is more important than us, the messengers. So saying so, we encourage anybody to comment, criticize, and all that. We'll take that. If we think that sounds better, we'll change our thoughts. But by and large, we're going to go what we think is right. It's not going to change, but please call in the show if you think you get some comments or criticism. We're not thin-skinned.
Yeah, or send us.
If we don't like you, we're going to ignore you.
Exactly.
I'm only kidding. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I mean, this is what this is about.
Yeah.
I put it out there. I've written it down. It's on the site. If you got any questions or comments or you got a burning desire, send me an email. Call me. My number's there. Everything is there. Bill's contact numbers are there.
Yeah.
Call either one of us and let us know.
Some of the comments are so lame. Screwdriver doesn't type fast enough. Who cares? He didn't type fast enough. Bill's sometimes mean to Screwdriver. Listen to the whole show, guys. We've been around for many, many, many years. The way I speak is the way I speak. So trust me, I'm not picking on him. And if I was, he's a big boy. Take care of himself. Trust me. So where do you got to go?
Well,
stuff I want to talk about. You go first.
One thing real quick.
Yeah,
somebody
sure.
Sent me something today. This kind of goes along with the way I just talked about it. And it's called The History of the Middle Finger, Bill. And it's pretty good. It's before the Battle of Agincourt in 1415. By the way, this is from Hildy. And I tried to get a hold of him. I didn't have a contact number. But anyway, before the Battle of Agincourt in 1415, the French, anticipating victory over the English, proposed to cut off the middle finger of all the captured English soldiers. Without the middle finger, it would be impossible to draw the renewed English longbow and therefore would have been incapable of fighting in the future. Or longbow, I'm sorry. This famous English longbow was made of the native English yew tree, and the act of the drawing the longbow was known as plucking the yew or pluck yew. Much to the bewilderment of the French, the English won a major upset and began mocking the French by waving their middle fingers at the defeated French. Actually, I do that on a daily basis to a few people, saying, "See, we can still pluck you." Since pluck you is rather difficult to say, the difficult consonant cluster at the beginning has gradually changed to a labiodentals fricative F. And thus the
what
word,
type of word is that?
I have
spell that word out, will you?
Labiodental or TALS.
That's not anything in my
no.
language, but all right.
Yeah, it's a fricative F. And thus the word.
Fricative?
Yeah, it says right here, Bill. And thus the words often used in conjunction with the one-finger salute. It is because of the pheasant feathers on the arrows used to, with the longbow, that the symbolic gesture is known as giving you the bird. It's still an appropriate salute to the French today.
That makes good sense, because they're talking about the pheasant's feathers on the end of the arrow were giving them the pheasants, were giving them the bird. The arrows, the feathers. Yeah, like I should tell you. I never knew that. I just thought it was one of those things we lost in life. I want to talk about a few things while you're making a note or two here. And we mentioned this last time, but I want to talk about this again because I'm kind of interested in this program here. We're talking about the Amber Alert signs. Share the road, look twice for motorcycles is the message that millions of Californians awoke on their Thursday morning commute. Another one was look twice. Motorcycles are everywhere. In an outstanding show of support, Caltrans posted the message statewide in efforts to increase awareness of motorcyclists. Traditionally, the highly visible Amber Alert signs are used only to deliver traffic advisories on road conditions and occasionally to alert the morning public in case of child abduction. Now, in addition to the primary purpose, the state's Amber Alerts are going to display a new message asking California motorists to be more aware of motorcyclists that occupy and share the road with them daily. And the biker community has John Del Santo of San Diego of the American Brotherhood Aim Towards Education, BAIT, and he's also with Bolt, is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm going to get that right in there.
That's correct.
This is one man on his own doing this here with a few friends.
The only problem with that, Bill, is they didn't give him the credit. They took credit for it themselves.
Yeah, I know. But now here we got here. I'm going to tell you, I'm quoting this from the new Quick Throttle publication, March 2010. I spoke to Lisa Delgarde and Chris Delgarde. I'm sorry, the publisher and associate publisher. And I asked them, I want to read this out of their book here because I thought it was important. They're telling everybody John Del Santo did this here. A BAIT has contacted John Del Santo, and they've called him tenacious as a pit bull. For years, he's been muddling through bureaucrats, and finally his dream has become realized. Without making any new laws, he did this selfishly for the riders of California, because seeing them return home safely in one piece has been his greatest passion. Helmets off to John Del Santo.
Absolutely, Bill. Absolutely.
You know, we know John, we know Fran. We mentioned this in the past, but now finally he's getting good at publication, good acknowledgement, Quick Throttle publication saying this here. While I got Quick Throttle here, by the way, Quick Throttle said that, please, I could take anything in one other magazine, so I guess that's not plagiary, we're just taking it. I want to talk to briefly about Bub Enterprises here. They're the guys that build exhaust pipes. They have received the very first license and approval from the California Air Resources Board, CARB, to sell its catalytic converter-equipped exhaust in California, and thus nationally as CARB's restrictions exceed those of the feds. Initial models were approved in October 2009 and we sold for use in Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Each set comes with a 5-year warranty and will be available for sale later this spring. Now, why am I happy about this? I'm happy that Bub has done something so they don't go out of business. Am I happy about that this sewing machine quiet sound we're going to deal with? No. The rest of you states out there, pay attention to what we're facing in California. The stock Harley-Davidson exhaust systems sound like sewing machines. It is so boring. I was afraid that a lot of these companies that we know would all go belly up. But Bud has stepped up the line, and Bud said, hey, we want to keep our employees in. We're going to make exhaust pipes for Harley-Davidson. I hope the other exhaust companies out there can step up. I don't want anybody to lose their job this trying times. I wish they didn't have to come up with this type of exhaust system, but the truth of the matter is, either they comply or they go belly up. And speaking of belly up, I want to mention one more thing, Screwdriver.
Go ahead, Bill.
Did you ever see a Ridley motorcycle?
Yes, I have.
Well, you and I have a friend of ours, Marion, here in North County. She went with me on a 500-mile one-day ride down to Puerto Penasco, mainland Mexico, on a Ridley. Broke down 3 times getting down there, and since we had no manual, I was kind of like piecemealing the bike back together. Coming back, she rode 500 miles nonstop without braking. I thought that was pretty darn good for an automatic motorcycle. However, Ridley Motorcycle, the innovative company that first brought you a fully automatic motorcycle, it will later put this innovation into the very first automatic chopper, announced it will not be returning. They've gone bankrupt. its future is in serious doubt as we went to press. Now, they work on some centrifugal clutch like the Polaris snowmobile. I've got to look at the motorcycles. I thought for people with a handicap or for some reason for people who do not like clutches, it's a good program. A lot of the stuff I didn't like about it, but I'm sorry to see another American company going belly up. More employees get lost. I don't know. Now, on a positive note, though, I spoke to, I'm going to switch subjects again here. Custom Chrome, the parts catalog, they're going to have their 40th anniversary. I was speaking to some of their reps and all that today, yesterday rather, and they said they'd love to have us mentioned on the show. For 40 years, they've been in existence. Now, they've had their ups and downs, including a flirtation with bankruptcy. Today, it is alive and stronger. I know they, again, employ a lot of people. In this day and age, I'm worried about anybody losing a job. I'm worried about any American companies going belly up. The last thing I want is to get more crap parts. So I appreciate the fact they're still alive. You and I have lost some friends this week that went belly up. We made the leather company went belly up. Another friend of mine came up from San Diego, Screwdriver. His company's gone belly up. These are people all employed. What's the life down at your place? Have you guys lost any more employees down there?
Not this week, Bill.
What, do you have any influx coming up in the near future? Because you always have like a lot going out the door.
Yeah, Saturday I'll be launching the ship down the ways.
Oh, yeah, tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, hopefully it won't rain, but...
Well, what's wrong with the ship? It goes in the water. What's the difference if it rains?
No, I understand that, though, but...
You built the ship, you're afraid if it rains?
No.
I'm not feeling real comfortable.
There's a big ceremony that goes on with this.
You want me to get on the ship and you're worried about it raining.
No.
All right, go ahead.
No, they invite the people that the ship is named after. And they christen the ship, and it slides down into the waist. There's a band. There's people sitting on the stage. They talk. All kinds of stuff's going on. The only problem is I'll be up on top looking down at them. So I'll get wet first.
Okay, the ship goes out. Does it make it look a little U-turn around the harbor or something like that?
No, they take it straight out, take it off to the side. They offload everybody, and they take it over to another.
Offload into what? What?
A pontoon.
They give them what?
No, a pontoon, and then they drive a pontoon to the dock, and everybody gets off.
What about the ship out there?
They take it and park it later on. They have to make room for it because once that goes in the water, they have to strategically place it first with all the tugboats. And then
this is what you do for a living. This is your job. So you actually make ships. And how long is that ship again?
862 feet long.
How many ships have you launched so far?
This will be the 10th.
Anyone sank?
No.
Okay. Responsibility?
One went to Haiti.
Yeah.
Why? To help with the relief.
We got problems here in America.
Yeah, I know.
Still the problems in America first.
And then the other one is, I can't really say where they're at because it's like a secret. I don't want to get in any trouble. There's some things you can talk about and some things you can't. But it starts at...
What do you mean? It's a congressman and senators on the party or something? Some party ship? Is that what you want to say?
No.
You don't want to say it? Don't say it.
No.
It's all right. Don't say it.
It's just I can't really say where they're at. I know one went to Haiti, and then the hospital ship we had in San Diego also went to Haiti.
Help Americans first. Once we help all the Americans, then help the other people. That's my theory. Any money we get should be there to help Americans. Once we're done helping all the Americans, then we help the other countries.
You know what?
I don't know.
It's just like I got something off the wire, Bill. It concerns biker rights, and... This story is from the early fall. We talked about it before, but it's just, it's just really, it's too funny to ignore, Bill. This happened in Lake Wylie, South Carolina, called the Knothole. It's been around for years, but a few months ago, the owner put up a sign that reads, "Please notice, no colors allowed, thank you." It got the attention of a news channel, 36 viewer, who asked to be identified only as Jane. At first looking at it, I was offended. And then after I got kind of angry, said Jane. A few days ago, Jane, who was of Asian descent.
How old is she?
She doesn't say how old
she is. She good looking?
I don't know, Bill.
Why do you read this stuff to us?
Because it's good.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway, it's a few days ago, Jane, who was of Asian descent, and some girlfriends headed to the bar for a drink.
Your girlfriend's good looking?
I don't know.
Jesus, all right, go ahead.
There's no criteria.
Go ahead. I'm sure it's interesting to somebody.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So they headed to the bar for a drink, and a sign stopped her in her tracks. Whether you're white, black, Asian, Hispanic, doesn't matter what race you are. Just reading that sign, you should be offended by it, Jane said. But does the sign mean what it says, or is it saying something else? We welcome people from all walks. The sign has nothing to do with the skin color. said Bo Lake, owner, co-owner of Knothole. He says colors has to do with the gangs, specifically motorcycle gangs. Each gang has a color or a patch, and most gangs would be willing to fight to the death to defend it. That's true, Bill. I hope everybody is here to get along, Lake said. If you're not here to get along and have a good time, I don't want you here. Concern about biker gangs went up a notch when one of the heavy hitter clubs moved in several months ago, but the York County Sheriff's Office, I'm not going to say who it was, but the color was red and white. York County Sheriff's Office says the gang hasn't been involved in any major incidents so far. While Jane understands the bar explanation, she said she believes the sign could be altered to make it clearer. Hopefully people will go through the bar and will think twice, Jane said. Lake City has gotten other complaints, including one from the NAACP, but he says the group was satisfied with his explanation, and that was the end of it.
You and I go to bars, which are club bars always. Do you know of any in Southern California that says no colors?
Not yet.
No, I don't. In my life,
not
I've
yet.
Been in many different states.
I've seen one that says no Hondas, but other than that, nothing else. But we got, you know, everybody that rides, you can ride whatever you want. It's up to you. It's your choice.
If you're an American citizen, you have a right to that.
That's right. You have a choice.
Especially if you're an American veteran, I'm the last one to criticize what you ride. I don't think Screwdriver and I are special because we have Harley-Davidsons. I think we're lucky because we have Harley-Davidsons. We have a lot of great friends that ride Harleys, but we have a lot of great friends that ride other motorcycles. I don't pick and choose my friend on what they ride. I give everybody a chance to show me they're a man first or a woman. Then they can tell what type of bike they ride. But you know, I kind of think about it. I've never seen in California anywhere a bar that says no colors.
Never.
I know in Arizona... I've been to several bars that wouldn't let clubs in, but none out here.
That's true, Bill. Someone just typed into the chat room that we need the NAACP for the bikers. Maybe we make a call, find out about that, check it out, see what goes on.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Well, that's pretty. Why is it we bikers are stepped on all the time? You know, I got a theory. It's because we are so divided. We have political organizations which aren't pulling together. We have people who think they're spokesperson for the motorcycle community, who think they're more important. As you and I say over and over,
absolutely,
the message is more important than the messengers.
Absolutely.
I think that if we could just somehow stop dividing, bad-mouthing each other, picking on each other's formats, whatever it is, and try to say, I respect what you're saying, I don't have to agree with it, that's the only way we're going to make it. I go to large club meetings, get-togethers. My life has been 40 years of violence. We've seen that. It's going to be violence forever. I understand that. As long as we keep this violence in the motorcycle club world, as long as we keep this disorganization, this dysfunctional group of political groups that we have, we will never come together. And as long as we don't come together, we're never going to amount to anything. I think... You know, I'm really way on the limb. I think it was the American patriot John Hale,
mm-hmm,
who said, if we don't hang together, we'll hang separately.
True, Bill.
In this case, he meant if we don't stick together, we will hang by ourselves.
That's very true, Bill.
That is.
You know, it's just like this. I'm going to quote somebody here real quick. And this is kind of what I feel like. What we're up against right now, Bill. And we're not really up against it because we're still doing what we want to do. We want to get the message out. But this quote is from Sonny. When we do right, nobody remembers. When we do wrong, nobody forgets.
We are highly visible.
That's it. And right now, I think we're highly visible because of what we're doing. Thinking.
You know, you and I can't ride down the street without the police being concerned, but because we know our rights, they're like uncomfortable stopping us. You and I are at that major party in San Diego, and I spoke to some of the club people, and they said to me, you know, Bill, we appreciate some of your techniques, some of your tips you've told us,
mm-hmm,
you reminded us. You don't have to say F this and F that.
As well as me
you
too, Bill.
You just need to know your rights. You need to sit down and say no. Now, I'm going to bust one of our friends here for a second. He got pulled over, no probable cause. Yada, 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 yada. He has the information and all that. They said to him right away, for our information card, we're going to ask you, would you take your jacket off, so we can see your tattoos. Now, I'm not going to say your name, but if you're listening, you know exactly who it is. He remembered what we said almost. He said, I do not give you permission. I will not take my jacket off. And he named all his tattoos. And afterwards, he came back to me. He said, Bill, I almost had it down pat. He said, but I got a little bit intimidated. When they ask you questions, you don't have to respond.
Answer them with a question, Bill.
Say no.
Or answer them with a question.
I always say, I do not give you my permission. I'd like to look in your saddlebags. I do not give you permission. We're hoping to talk to more and more and more people in our area, and different people using different techniques in Northern California, East Coast, Midwest. Everybody uses their own technique. What works for Screwdriver and I is letting the police officers know we will not give up our rights. Screwdriver and I are American citizens. We're veterans. We ride Harley-Davidsons everywhere. We don't look to avoid the police. I want to ride right alongside them. Why should I, an American citizen, be afraid of the police department? The same as a dog catcher, firefighter. They're just people. You have your driver's license, registration, insurance. Stop your bike if they red light you. Sit there. These people are not your friends. They don't want to be your friends. They want to ask you questions to gather information.
That's true, Bill.
Don't help them.
That's true, Bill.
I'm not anti-police at all. I've never in my life been anti-police. I'm just saying for a fact, I will not give up my rights. And when I became knowledgeable, I realized, wait a minute.
Wait, Bill. Yeah. Where did you get that knowledge from?
Well, I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you right now. When I was a young man. I'm going to lead up to that. When I was a young man, I came home from the military in 1971, and I had my 64 Panhead. They used to pull me over at 9, 10 o'clock at night, take me down the police station, impound my motorcycle, take it down the wrecking yard, hold me till about 3 o'clock in the morning and release me, not charging me. I didn't know what I could do. I pretty much stayed out of the loop. I said, you know what? I can't fight the cops. Now, I'm going to go back to, I've got friends of mine, Red Baron, a great pioneer. I saw Red beat his head against the wall so many times trying to fight the system, trying to get the citizens, the bikers of San Diego County, San Diego City, try to get them involved. And many of those people, like myself, said, let Red do it. Let Steve Bianco do it. And I sat back and said, let somebody else do it. I don't want to get involved. A few months back, my friend over here, Screwdriver, got a ticket. Came to me right away. Said, what do you think? My reaction was, pay the ticket. He didn't want to pay the ticket. Came back to me again. He said, what do you think? I said, just pay the ticket. And from this point on, our life's done a complete 180. And I'm going to ask you from that point on, Wayne, what did you do about the ticket?
I didn't pay it. I fought it, Bill.
Did you have to appeal it, or what did you do?
I came home after I talked to you, because you kind of twisted my arm, got me a little pissed off. So I came home, I got in front of the computer, and I typed in how to beat a helmet ticket in California. The first thing to come up was Bolt of California. So I made some calls. I talked to Ray Hinke. Ray turned me on to Mark Temple. Mark Temple turned me on to Red Baron. Red Baron turned me on to John Del Santo. And they gave me all the information I needed. When I went to court, they decided that I was not guilty of not wearing a safety helmet. They found me guilty of not having the label in my helmet. So they switched a charge in court, which was part of the grounds of my appeal, which, by the way, I won, Bill. And after that, I started making some calls, getting more information. I went down to the police station. I had filled out my IA complaints. Got nowhere with that guy. Had to go back, make an appointment to talk to the chief. But in between that, I talked to Red. He introduced me to the chief, assistant chief of traffic in San Diego, who told me that the guy I was going to deal with was one of his cadets at the academy. Give him a call. Let him give him a call. So I waited a few days. They played phone tag here and there. Finally, he called me up and said, yeah, I talked to him. But when the guy first heard the message from him, the very next day, they stopped giving people the helmet tickets. They stopped the discriminatory stops. The very next day, and all it took was one phone call. And then when I tried to talk to the guy, he didn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I went above him. I went outside. I filled out an IA complaint on him. I walked back in. And I turned it in. Next day, I get a call. I want to talk to the chief. I make the appointment. I go see him, which, by the way, he rides a fat boy with shotgun pipes and wears a beanie helmet. So I said, how can you objectively, you're breaking the law, and you're telling these guys to go out and enforce the law. Can you give me something in certain, in writing, that says you have a policy or procedure to back up what you're doing? 10 days go by. I get a letter in the mail. We have no policy, no procedure. I go back. I talk to the guy. He says, Monday, are you available Monday? Sets me up for an interview with the Internal Affairs guy. Being that it was just before Christmas, he asked if we could do it on the 7th of January. And then the rest is history. We went in there. They gave us, I gave them all the information that they didn't know. Because the one guy said he was bringing him because he had all the knowledge. But the 3-inch, I think they were intimidated by that 3 inches of paperwork I had with the injunctions and federal injunctions and all the paperwork. So next thing I know, they're not doing anything unless they catch you doing something wrong.
That's a good point. And we've said that in the past. I'll repeat that again because Screwdriver and I are not attorneys. We're not paralegals. In the past, we really have never belonged to any organizations. We've always let the other guy do it. At some point in time, you've got to draw a line in the sand. Screwdriver drew the line in the sand. He came back and said, Bill, this is what I'm doing. Do you want to give me a hand here? And I realized how sincere Screwdriver was, and I realized how wrong it is for me to keep letting somebody else step up and take care of the problems. There are people all across this great country listening and can talk to other people. You have to, at some point, step up and say, we can't keep going on like this. We need to make changes. I'm not into anarchy. I am not asking you to burn the police station down. I'm telling you, if there is a wrong law, you need to get together, change it. You can't just get tickets and fighting it. You have to change the law. That's my opinion on that. There are many people out there that want to make statements, they want to get tickets. That's their style of fighting it. And again, I applaud them on that. We've decided that we need to make changes in our town. Screwdriver and I are not rocket scientists.
But
we don't think we can save the world.
But we have an aerospace engineer, Bill.
We do have access to that one. That's true. We do.
And he has proof that the helmet law is full of shit.
That's a little dry reading. What he says is very important. It's a little over my head. But, you know, again, the point I want to make to everybody listening out there is, it's your neighborhood. It's your town. You can't keep letting, or you can't keep waiting for the other guy to do something about it. It's not going to happen. Nothing's going to happen.
No.
Here in California, again, we don't have any bars ever, to my knowledge, to say no colors. And again, I travel across country. You travel out there. Well, let's talk about Mexico. I've never seen anything in Mexico that says no colors either.
No.
Why is it some states think that they have a right to do that? Why are you people who live in these states, why are you allowing this? If the bar owner insists on doing this, maybe that bar doesn't need to be frequented by any motorcyclist. By any motorcyclist. I don't want to take a dollar away from anybody because he's a man or a woman's got a family to take care of. The point is you can't shut one of us down without shut all of us down. But until we work together as a team, until we get all these political organizations, I'm not going to say all the names, you've heard them, until they'll come together and do something, and they'll put their egos aside.
That's true, Bill. Because
and I don't know if it'll ever happen.
That's true, very true. Because if you remember when I told you about that I wanted to do that run to the wall, and I gave the option people could wear a helmet or not.
Right.
And it kind of just threw a monkey in a wrench because everybody's feelings got hurt. They didn't understand what I was doing. They just saw what they read, and they took off on a tangent. Until we explained it to them, and then I just said, okay, you know what? It's not worth the hassle.
Right.
I'm done. And what they did was they ruined something good because I showed you what came in the mail today.
Yes. We have a couple programs coming up here. April 11th, where we have a run from the VA hospital in San Diego to my shop, Oceanside, and it's for the paralyzed vets. And we have a, and then also the week after that, we have a run to the Vietnam Moving Walls coming to Oceanside. You and I will be speaking on, I think, Saturday at the Vietnam Wall, and we'll be speaking on Sunday for the run for the paralyzed vets. And tell everybody, if you would, what is some of the things that we're going to be auctioning off?
Well, basically, Bill, what happened was I was on another show, and I had heard, and somebody had called me. Well, one of the show hosts called me and asked me to call in and talk to this guy, and I did, and I found out a lot of things. And one of the things I found out was that this kid was growing up. Him and his dad used to watch the biker build off all that stuff on Discovery Channel. So what they decided to do was his son joined the Marines. He went to Iraq. 2005, he got killed. So his dad decided that what could he do to build a tribute to his son, and he built a bike, and it's beautiful. And he takes it all up and down the East Coast and different places. They took it to the Marine Memorial for the Marine Marathon. They had it parked there, and you know, people were looking at it and everything. And a young Marine walked up with one leg missing and said, "Man, I wish I could ride that bike." Larry told him, "Why can't you?" He said, "Well, I can't work the clutch." He said, "No, the Mameluke sword,
yeah,
it's the shifter.
What's that name?
It's a Mameluke sword.
Mameluke. Is that
legit? It's a legit.
You're making that name.
No,
all
it's
right.
A legit sword. That's
I was in the Army. You're in the Marine Corps.
Right.
I didn't understand. I'm just asking.
No, Mameluke sword. Mameluke sword.
Marines across the country understand
where it came
that.
From. That's why the word leathernecks came. They wore that thick piece of leather around their neck because when the pirates would come on the boat, they'd try and hit them with a sword.
Uh-huh.
So they called them leathernecks. And it was the Mameluke sword. It's real nice. So I got one. If you want to see it, I'll go get it. I got one when I got out. It was given to me. But to get back to that, his son was killed, and he decided he was going to build this bike. And he got a bunch of people involved on the East Coast, and they helped him build a bike. And he sent me two of the laminated pictures. They're like 24 inches by 32. Really beautiful, though. And what we're going to do is we're going to raffle them off, one at each event. And we just haven't figured out if we're going to do a silent auction or how we're going to do it. But.
You know, I was thinking of silent auction. I talked about that, but I want to make it more of a real dog and pony show. I want to bring him up on stage. I want people to appreciate the fact that here is one father who's lost his son, but their connection was a Harley-Davidson and the United States Marine Corps. So in the background, we have the United States Marines.
That's true.
We have the Harley-Davidson. I want you to... I'll be up on stage. I'll tell everybody, blah, blah, blah. I'll have you come out and tell us a story about it. Then I want you to perhaps unravel so everybody can see this. And then I think at that point in time, I'm going to do an auction for the highest amount of money we'll sell. And if it goes too low, you and I kick some money and we can take care of something with that.
Right.
Now, again, when I say we're going to sell it, the run on the 11th, every nickel we make, we'll have a member of the VA Hospital of Paralyzed Veterans. I think Kelly Price Noble. She'll be there to collect the money on the spot. And on the 17th, the Vietnam Moving Wall, those people will be right there on stage, too. So we'll bring the gentleman or lady who won it on stage, and he or she will give the money right away to Traveling Wall. So we don't want anybody to think that we're...
We're not. Bill, I'm not in this. I'm not in this with you for the money. I'm not. And if people, if you're within a driving distance of a VA hospital, please take a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour out of your day. Go up there and just go in and talk to somebody because they have nobody to talk to. Nobody comes to see them. Most guys, some of the guys out here in California are from the East Coast. Some of the guys in the East Coast are from California, the Midwest. Just go in and say hello. Even a little pat on the arm. Like Bill and I, we kind of take some girls who do certain things for a living in a bar, strippers or whatever you want to call it, and, it just brightens their day when we show up.
It brightens their day a lot more than when you and I just walk in.
That's true. I have meetings
at the VA hospital. I have meetings with paralyzed vets in there. And I try to spend a few minutes before the meetings and after the meetings talk to them. I want to tell you that during the daytime, if you're in the hospital, and say, let's talk about the Vietnam War. You went in the Vietnam War and you weren't married, and you're going to be in the chair, you're going to be in the hospital the rest of your life, your parents have passed away, you didn't get married, your cousins, everybody's gone. You have no other resources except to spend the rest of your life in the VA hospital. When the people all stop coming in, when all the doctors and nurses go home, at nighttime, I like to hang around and talk to some of the people. Because when the lights go down low and they're pretty much stacked up, two people to a room, it's pretty depressing. Some of them got computers, some of them got TV, but it's not human voices. And that's what they want, the human touch. And also, please, while we're talking about that, when you go in the VA hospital and you see somebody in a wheelchair, now I'm just over 6 foot tall, 220 pounds. I'm a little taller than the people in the wheelchair, obviously. I'm asking everybody, do not be uncomfortable because a man or woman is in a wheelchair. Look them in the eyes and say hello.
Exactly.
And I say this, I
kneel down, kneel down. Kneel down.
Yeah,
bend
I
over. Kneel down.
I don't bend over.
Well,
I just offer my hand.
I know.
Different style. Different style.
You got bad knees, Bill.
I'll get one bad knee. But these people in the wheelchair, offer your hand to them. Say hello. It's the people in the wheelchair who people walk by. They don't want to be rude to them. They don't know how to approach the person in the wheelchair, so they don't make eye contact. They walk by. And I'm going to ask you, if you were in a wheelchair and you're in the front of the VA hospital, and there's people walking by, all you want to do is say hello to somebody, and yet people are uncomfortable. Not afraid of you, but they're uncomfortable. They don't know what to say, what's appropriate and all that. I'm going to tell you what's appropriate. Just say hello. If you got a minute or two, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? You in the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, a Coast Guard, Air Force? I hope I haven't forgotten anybody. What state you're from? That's all it takes, you know.
All it takes to start the conversation, Bill. Like right now, I want to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to send this out here. If anybody wants to call in, the number is 347-826-7753. I have a caller right now, Bill, I'm going to bring on, and this should be, if I'm not mistaken. Hello, caller. Hello. Hello. Hello, caller.
You know I hate technology.
I hate it too, Bill.
Did I tell you the devil invented the computer? If I didn't tell you that 8,000 or 9,000 times, let me add one more time. On one hand, I respect and I appreciate the fact that this has given us the chance to communicate with people all across the country. And as we know, England, Europe, and Mexico City, but
that's correct.
I can't stand this computer stuff. Maybe you're not hitting it right.
No, we're there, Bill.
Where's the hammer?
Yeah, that's true, Bill. Well, it's on top of my saddlebag, Bill.
Well, did we lose the caller? We still have
him. No, we didn't lose the caller, Bill. I'm just trying to figure
maybe
out
the caller just speaks real quiet.
I don't know.
Can we call the caller?
I'm going to call the caller.
You know, while we're doing that, too, can you send a picture out so everybody can see the poster we're going to give away or sell, whatever we're going to do? Can you let them know how to see the picture?
Yes, I will. I'll put it in the chat.
Okay, good. All right. Phil's trying to use one telephone to call the computer. Oh, somebody out there? Hello? Somebody? Hello? I don't hear nothing. Well, let's go back to the hospital again real quick like that. Pretty much every show, wherever the show, I'm going to talk about this. Because I'm a vet, I don't have a single injury. Who knows why not? Why the guy next to me, why not me? I don't have a clue why. But I've done my whole life since I came home in 1971 to make sure that I go down to the VA hospital and I talk. Since recent times, for the very first time, our women are coming home disfigured. Now, we've never had women disfigured. We've had a few of them. But with these suicide bombers going on overseas right now, our women, our daughters, our sisters, our mothers, our aunts, they're coming home missing an arm. They're missing a leg. Disfigured in the face. And they say to me, look at me, Bill. What man is going to go out with me? I don't have an answer. The women can tell me, I can say something lame like, oh, you find the right guy.
Right gay?
Yeah, I got that one.
Come on, Bill.
But the girls tell me that they can see a man missing an arm or a leg, and they can see a whole man. But we men are so shallow. We don't necessarily want to date a woman with missing an arm or missing a leg, or a woman whose face has been disfigured because of shrapnel and all that. It's hard for the American psyche to accept the fact that a woman had come home injury. We can see a man walk down missing an arm or a leg, a soldier, and we say, God bless you. Thank you for what you've done. But when we see a woman warrior at the hospital walking down the street, the average male, and then that screwdriver and I, we're uncomfortable because we grew up playing with sticks, pretend rifles, and our sisters grew up with tea parties and fancy dresses. It's hard for us to picture our women out there fighting. But I'm going to tell you, folks, they're out there fighting. They're out there getting wounded. They're dying. We don't have enough women going to the hospital talking to women. More often than not, the VA hospitals...
Hello.
Oh, somebody came in.
Yeah, you were trying to call in? I was trying to talk to you, but you didn't.
Well, I think we're... Anyway, we're going to talk right over Philip. He's talking to the caller that lost with that. We have so many women at the hospital that need to speak to women alone. I'm sure they want to speak to good-looking guys, too. But the women's needs are different than men's needs.
You can ask any questions you want.
Women can stop by a few minutes, too. Stop in, visit. I know when I bring some of the dancers down,
All right.
The women don't seem to mind talking to them an awful lot, but I'm going to challenge everybody out there who rides a motorcycle.
That was,
not just the guys down.
That was someone who was listening, Bill, and he said it wasn't what he thought it was going to be.
Okay.
No problem.
All right.
He wasn't sure what we were talking about. Well,
he called in and tells you to know what we're talking about. All right.
No, he was listening on the phone.
Uh-huh.
But it came up that we had a caller.
Oh.
Yeah.
So back to VA hospital, yada, 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 yada. Enough of that talk right there. So what you got over there, buddy? I want to mention again the Quick Throttle publication. I want to talk about them a little bit. Do you have something you want to jump in?
No, go ahead.
All right. I mentioned the Quick Auto publication. I told them the great things that John Del Santo did, but I didn't mention that Chris Delgard, he gave all of us, the motorcycle community, his publisher's page, the biggest first page coming in the magazine to talk about the Share the Road, Look Twice for magazines. I've known Chris and Lisa for some time. My husband and wife team has started a motorcycle publication. I think they've come a long way in a hurry. They stay pretty much true to form. I have not disagree with anything they've said. I like the reporters. You and I have had very, very good fortune to know Art Hall, Randy Twells, a few of the other crowd up there. I see them at the Easy Rider bike shows. I see them in Vegas. I see them at Laughlin. There's a misconception about us motorcycle riders that if you don't ride everywhere, you're not a true biker. I try not to judge the amount of miles I ride against what somebody else rides. I'm fortunate enough that if I want to leave on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, my shop's closed anyway on a Monday, I'm gone. A lot of people say, well, gee, Bill, I have to work. I have a kid. I have responsibility. I have a wife. We all do.
That's it, Bill.
Stop judging your life to my life. Stop judging how I ride a bike, how you ride a bike. There are people out there who ride a bike 7 days a week. They probably think I'm a wuss. People come up to me and say, yeah, but you're always riding. I'm always doing what's right for me. Stop listening to these celebrities and these TV stars and movie stars and all this. They're trying to create an image. It's bullshit. There is no image. It's you and your motorcycle, whatever it is, how you choose to ride in. In California, we have a lot of bikers profiling up and down the coast. I have nothing wrong with those cookie-cutter motorcyclists. This is what they want to do. On a long, long trip, their motorcycles are not normally set up for the type of riding I do. It's not that one style of riding is better than the other. It's just simply different. I go to bars and not, well, you and I go to bars all the time.
Right.
I hear...
Sorry about that.
What was that?
I don't know.
Is that your music?
No, it was the devil again.
Kind of like a disco or something, wasn't it?
Ah.
Wasn't my type of music. By the way, Just establish it. I prefer blues or jazz. Screwdriver and have different personalities. How would you describe your taste in music?
Anything that's mellow.
Speaking of mellow, what's Baker doing these days? I know he's not calling in tonight, but he's got a gig coming up, doesn't he?
Yes, May 8th. It's a charity run, charity ride in Nashville, Tennessee. And he called us last week to tell us he's got corporate sponsorship, though.
Oh, outstanding.
He's got Budweiser behind him now. So
outstanding.
They took a lot of the heat off.
I've told speakers in charity events over and over and over, if you're going to do an event in your area, at some point in time, you're going to bottom out on your numbers. You're not going to draw more people in. That means no more money unless you can reach for corporate sponsorship. That money can go on and on and on and on. So if you want to do a good thing and you want to get all these bikers together, that's good. But you got to look at corporate sponsorship. You can't put a run on by a bunch of good old boys, and that's what you're going to have, just another party. You and I go through them an awful lot. We also go through more organized runs, like our good friend Steve Shapiro, who runs the Bikers Against Diabetes. He has the Bikers Against Diabetes run up there. That is a major event putting on. I invite everybody to come down and try to watch it. The Bikers Against Diabetes in several states. But you go back to Baker for a second with that. You were pretty kind of blew it off kind of fast. I know you don't like tooting your own horn, but I understand you're going to be down in Nashville. I understand you're going to be on stage.
That's true, Bill. I'm going to be on stage as one of the MCs. And it's going to be, I don't know, you know, that'd be like the first time I'm really out there by myself. But not, you know, not really. I mean, I'll be around Chuck and Hermes and the rest of them. But
all it'll really be is you'll be there without somebody cutting you off and interrupting like I do all the time anyway, so
that's
it won't
true.
Be any real big deal.
That's true.
You know, I noticed that the invitation, when it came in, I thought that had my name on the invitation, but you said no. Because you're flying first class, and they're giving you a suite, and they're comping you all this for you to speak, and I'm not going to be speaking.
No, Bill. And
I wasn't invited. Huh?
No, you were invited. But
I think I was invited. I think my name was on it.
Absolutely. But due to a personal thing you have going on, you're not going to be
personal
able to,
thing?
Well, not a personal. I don't mean personal.
My wife's health is kind of rough. Guys.
I don't know how to.
Yeah, no, it's a delicate one. My wife's health is rough right now. She has diabetes and multiple sclerosis. My wife and I have been together 39 years. I want to just pause for a second. When my wife and I first started out, she rode behind me everywhere. We had our my motorcycle has always been Pan Am. It's my favorite. My last trip to Sturgis, I was on a 40-over Springer. Paco made it for us. Suicide, of course, 20-inch front tire, rigid frame, stretch, yada, yada, yada. My wife and I drove everywhere. After 20 years of my wife and I being together, she sat up one day and she said, I want my own motorcycle. I never encouraged my wife to ride. I never discouraged her. I figured what's going to happen, happen. She went to a motorcycle safety school, which I kind of thought was kind of lame. But the more I studied it, I realized these people taught her an awful lot. She came out of that school a very confident rider. After a year, now, I thought she should get a motorcycle Harley-Davidson right away, but she said that she thought she'd develop her skills, so we got those Harley look-alike bikes. For 1 year, my wife rode everywhere, rain, mud, fire. We went through everything in our trips in Mexico. Then she woke up and she said, this is 1 year after she got the Japanese thing, I know what I want now. I want a Dynaglide. My wife rode a Dynaglide everywhere in the world that we can imagine. We've been in Europe, we've been in Mexico, we've been in America, blah, blah, blah. She's been stricken with multiple sclerosis and diabetes. The hardest thing for her to give in was the fact that because she's losing the feeling in her feet, she couldn't come to stop signs and put her feet down because of transmission fluid and brake fluid. So she had to give her bike up. That was a tough call, buddy. That was a tough call. Now she problem driving the car, trying like that. So it was just difficult for her and I at this time, though. I think she's going to get better. We really think she will get better. It's something we were hoping that'll go on. However, we thought this point in time that we couldn't make the trip to Nashville. So I'm sure you'll be on stage. I'm sure you'll do a great job. Will you be mentioning anything about Bolt, I hope?
Yes, Bill.
All right.
I will be mentioning about Bolt. I will be talking about that, and I will be trying to spread the word, as they say. And They told me I'd have maybe 5 to 10 minutes, 15
minutes. Oh, that's probably why they didn't want me down there.
I don't know.
5 to 10 minutes.
I don't know. I don't know, Bill.
I was at an event once. Actually, a friend of mine is a pastor of a church. But once a year, I go down to the church. I'm more of a spiritual man than a religious man. I had an event coming up, and I was in the church, and he said, oh, we have a special guest here. Bill Kennedy came into the church, and he said, can you get up and give us a few words about your coming event? I got up and took two steps. My wife said out loud in church, I bet you he can't. And that's probably the truth. I seem to go, I don't know. I like talking, you know. I think for so long, I just wanted to let somebody else do all this stuff here. Now I'm realizing there's so many things that we need to deal with. There's so many reasons I don't want my government to keep taking these rights away from me. You and I are both veterans. We've lost a lot of our rights. I don't understand. You and I signed a contract when we went in, but these guaranteed rights, I've watched them vanish, vanish, vanish. I don't know what's going to happen to my grandchildren, the children after that. I know if our country calls them, they will step up and they represent America. I'm not for any war. I don't think anybody in their right mind would be for war. I try to justify wars, and I figured this out. Agree with me or disagree, but here it goes. We elect congressmen and senators. We elect a president. Now, by the way, I did not vote for this president. But when this man took the office, I'm going to tell you, he became my president. He became your president. We have elected these people in Washington, in state capitals. We elected them. We have to stand behind them. We're expecting them to make some decisions. So when it comes to the point where we have to look our grandchildren in the eyes and tell them that you have to go overseas, I think they need to know why.
Well, you know, Bill, just like you're talking about right now, I have someone that was, I don't know, some people are saying this sounds bad. Some people are can't get into the call. I don't know why.
Because the devil's in the computer.
Absolutely. But it's a story about a young man who, he's in the Army. Okay. And he's also a writer, Bill. But what happened was they're going to have a charity drive because basically, I'll start from the beginning, Bill.
All right.
Here's how this came to us. Hey, I wonder if you guys could assist me with something. This is from Gypsy Stan out of Boston.
Boston?
Right. Oh. Her name is Betsy Lester. What happened was this guy was she sent us a challenge, Bill, is what she did, and I accepted the challenge. And what we're going to do...
I don't accept nothing until I know more information. Well, no, I remember.
Okay,
cranky.
Well,
good.
Here we go. There's a soldier, and he's a writer who's fighting in Afghanistan now. He's from Georgia. But while he was overseas, some lowlife came and stole everything he owned from his home. Took his car, his scuba gear, his tools, TV, stereo, clothing. Wiped them out, Bill. They think it was the neighbor, but they can't prove it. Usually it's someone you know that does it to you, Bill. You know.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Sure.
What town is this again, please?
It's in, it's going to be, he's from Georgia, so he's going back to Georgia. But Betsy jumped on this.
Mm-hmm.
Betsy's in Boston.
Can we send a couple of the veteran motorcycle clubs to this guy's house, go to a neighbor next door, talk to this neighbor? I think this could be solved right away.
Yeah, I think it could be solved
right
away.
That's the way you and I would deal with this.
Absolutely. But if you let me get into it a little more. Okay. So one of the things she's doing is she's got a T-shirt wall. And which, if you go, I'll put the site up in a minute. But it's called community, it's www.communitywalk.com, United States_States/search for SPC farmer. Okay? And here's more on the story. According to her, folks, this guy is a writer. He lost everything while deployed fighting for our country. There's a movement to collect donations to help restore what he lost, and a collection of T-shirts from each and every state in the U.S. is underway as well. To show him that he's not abandoned, he had no insurance, so there's no way to recoup what he lost. the thing she challenged us was, Bill, to send two T-shirts. She preferred that they be XL or double XL. Anything you can spare would be appreciated. So we're going to see what we got in the kitty, and we'll go that way.
Well, you're always so generous with helping people. I got a couple questions I want to know. So why?
Okay.
What is he going to do with these T-shirts? What's the purpose of the T-shirts?
Just to show them support that every state in the Union, the United States, was involved with what happened to him. So it's kind of like every state saying, thank you for your service, and here's to help you with your loss.
All right, I like that.
Okay? So if you're interested in helping, please contact me. I'll put it up there in a minute, and I can give you more particulars. It's gypsypassion@AOL.com. That's gypsypassion. It's gypsy, gypsypassion@AOL.com, and I can give you more particulars. She wants to send, she'd love to send checks and shirts along, so there's some room for each of the states in the USA. To show support. Thank you in advance for your consideration. Okay? That was the first email she sent me.
All right.
Then,
I'm feeling warm so far.
Okay. Then she says, the Georgia soldier, this is what happened. The Georgia soldier loses everything to the thief while deployed overseas. While faithfully serving his country, Specialist Jeffrey Farmer was served a devastating blow. He broke into his home, took not only his personal possessions, but also his tools that he needs to make a living. So please help me. Please join us in helping me return to the U.S. be a cause for celebration rather than sorrow by donating whatever you are able to restore his ability to make a living, and therefore restore his faith in the decency of those he's sworn to protect. You and me, Bill. Basically, you and me. And everybody
else. You know what's bugging me? Because this sounds like somebody that knows this guy, knows he was out of town, and ripped him off. Not a total stranger. I'm feeling this. Not a stranger, but somebody knows him, ripped him off. These are people that when we find them, they need to be dealt with severely.
Absolutely, Bill. So Jeff will be returning from overseas to Georgia in about a month, though. And the local veteran, Bill Lockhart, has made it his goal to raise enough money by then to restore our soldier with all that was taken from him. Among the items stolen, again, were his tools, his truck, his welder, his tree service equipment, TVs, CDs, DVDs, his Xbox. They took everything, Bill. Basically everything he owned. The local police had no hope for finding these items either. Bill said, Jeff is sick about this, and I am too. He does not need to come home to nothing. So make a difference. If you'd like to help, please call Bill at 423-593-1572 or send a tax-deductible donation to the American Legion Post, care of Specialist Jeffrey Farmer, P.O. Box 305, Trenton, Georgia, 30752. And tax number available if you need one. They'll give you a tax. They'll give you a tax number.
Well, Let me stop right there. I got a question.
Sure.
You get people say that, I'm the easy one. The truth of the matter is you get the bigger heart than I do. What I'm going to do is, it says right over here, contact this American Legion Post 106. We have an American Legion Post riders in our neighborhood. I'm going to make a copy of this here. I'm going to contact these guys. I'm going to have these guys contact them. I want to check everything out. Anytime we ask anybody to contribute anything, please check this out the best, and we're going to check it out. So with your good heart, you want to help the whole world, but I'm going to check with American Post, and we'll get some information. I'll get back to our listeners.
That's
okay?
That's true, Bill. I guess Betsy was going to call in tonight, and
okay.
She might have technical difficulties on her end. But, she sent me another email, and she said, basically, California is notably missing from the states that have contributed. And she says, this is where the challenge comes in, Bill. If anybody can move the mountains and get folks to assist, it's you, honey. So
it's you. You're a soft heart.
So I'm requesting you assist me with getting the rest of the states covered. Right now, we're missing Arizona, Nevada, California, and a few others. Have to dig for the rest of the list, but I'd be so honored if you would help. So like Bill said, we're going to make a couple calls, check things out, and if it's...
We'll tell you what they tell us.
We'll tell you what they tell us, absolutely. We'll tell you next week. But we still have, I think it's a little over a month and a half to help out, Bill.
I'll get that tomorrow. I'll get on top of that. I'll get a report then. So next week's show. I want to help. Screwdriver wants to help the world. I want to help, but I'm just a cynic. I want to check everything out. I'm just not that quite easygoing. First of all, I'm in the Army, so I think God bless that man. God bless the armed forces. God bless everybody. Hope everybody comes home safe. I know they're not, but God bless all the families for putting up with them. I just check everything out, and I encourage everybody else to put it up there. And I know no matter what I say, even if I say no, you're going to send something out to them. So we'll deal with that later. You know?
That's true, Bill. You know, and it's like, you know, I really don't know, Bill, because there's another thing that happened to Betsy I was going to bring up, and I wish I wish we would have had her involved. But the number I have is a business number, so she's not there. I left a message. But the Motorcycle Hall of Fame for 2010 announced their inductees, Bill.
Am I in it?
No, you're not in it. Not this time, Bill.
No.
But what it says is the Sturgis Motorcycle Museum and Hall of Fame announced the Hall of Fame inductees for 2010, February 17th. We're a little behind on this, but that's why I got a hold of Betsy so we could talk to her about it. But they nominated, the inductees are, okay, the Sturgis Motorcycle Hall of Fame is designed to recognize individuals or groups who have made long-term positive impact on the motorcycle community. The first one was Nancy Davidson.
I got to tell you, Nancy Davidson, she comes in and helps us with the Paralyzed Veteran runs, the Bikers Against Diabetes run. Karen Davidson, our sister, I guess. The Davidson family's helped us an awful lot, so
that's
congratulations
true.
To the first one there, Nancy Davidson.
That's true.
Wife of Willie G. You know, I first met Willie years ago. I got to tell you, I asked him if he needed my unique talents. And he said, well, Bill, what is it you can do? I said, Willie, if you send me a motorcycle every year, I will beat that motorcycle down. I'll run the wheels off, and I'll run through mud. I'll thrash that bike and give you reports. And Willie said to me, you know, Bill, there's a Bill Kennedy in every state that wants to do that. He said, we have a testing factory, Bill. I said, they wouldn't beat it as bad as I do. But Willie said, thanks, Bill, but no. Willie's good people, too.
Right.
Congratulations to his wife, Nancy.
And then the next one was Betsy
yeah.
Lester. And she has a Biker Bits info blog that she does daily updates.
Uh-huh.
You know, and what her Biker Bits info does is that it gives bikers from all over the country information about rides, rallies, the vendor opportunities, the biker rights, and more. She operates a third website providing bikers with information about insurance covers because that's the business she's in. But that's the third one. So the other two are more important than the business one, though.
Where she have time to even sleep? That's a lot of work.
That's true. Maybe that's what happened with the phone call tonight, Bill. She's on the East Coast. But over the years, she has volunteered numerous hours to raising awareness for motorcycle safety and motorcycle insurance issues. While logging more than 100,000 motorcycle miles, she founded founded organizations and rides to raise funds for a variety of charities. She is a biker poet laureate, both Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And basically, Bill, what she did was she got this story and she decided to help this young soldier out, and she sent us a challenge. Basically, we're gonna see if we can help.
Betsy, I appreciate the challenge, and I hope you can appreciate our concern when we try to investigate everything. I'm sure it's legit. Back in my heart, I'm feeling it really is with that. But we'll do a little research. So before we tell our listeners what we're doing like that, and by next week, I'll give that report. Okay?
That's okay, Bill. We'll go from there, and then. The other thing is the next guy was Ronald McKinley.
I don't know Ronald McKinley doing. No.
And then
what do you do?
Yeah.
He threw his name out like you knew or something.
Well,
big time Charlie.
Here we go.
All right, go ahead.
Here's a little kicker to that.
Go ahead.
Bill happens to be an ex-Leo, Bill. South Dakota Highway Patrol and five of them as a motorcycle trooper, both during his time as a trooper and since his retirement in 1991. McKinley has dedicated himself to the motorcycle safety through talks, seminars, and safety ride courses. He is a Motorcycle Safety Foundation instructor, serves as a safety officer for four of Harley Owners Group Hog Chapters, teaches riders edge safety courses, writes a monthly safety newsletter for 18 groups, has served as a volunteer state safety coordinator for Harley-Davidson Motor Company, and teaches the Hog Primary Training Officer.
Well, he seems like he's got a full agenda, too.
Absolutely. And then the next guy was Roger Scheinman. He received the Founders Award. Roger spent countless hours keeping alive the history of motorcycling and the history of the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Excuse me while I flip over the page, guys. The Sturgis Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Roger has been a member of the AMA and as Jack Pine Gypsy for 20 years was instrumental in the operation of races in Sturgis throughout the years, but especially during the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Shimon was a founding partner and board member of both motorcycle museums in Sturgis and still volunteers his time to help make the Sturgis Motorcycle Museum and Hall of Fame a place where the history of motorcycling and Sturgis Motorcycle Rally can be shared from visitors all over the world. And then we have Stan Simpson. Involvement with motorcycles spanned 60 years, from his first Indian Scout ride in 1949 to his present-day work improving the direction of the American Motorcycle Association, the AMA Bill. Samson has been a force in the motorcycle industry. Stan is one of a rare breed that is fully involved with both on-road and off-road motorcycling. Then the next guy we have is Kiwi Mike Thomas. He's the founder of Kiwi Indian Motorcycle Company and is widely recognized as one of the most knowledgeable experts on classic Indian motorcycles in the world. It says here that tribute to the classic Indians of years past, in addition to more than 25,000 different reproduction part numbers, Tomas sponsors race teams and even competes in endurance races or the endurance rides to demonstrate the viability of the classic Indian in today's world. You mean they found one that works, Bill?
I'm biting my tongue here. There were real Indians, and there was that other stuff we had out there. Now, I have a lot of respect for that Kiwi Mike. I've not met him. I heard he's really done his homework. He's really put together a great motorcycle. I sincerely hope so. I'm not a great fan of the cookie-cutter Indians, but I understand this Indian Mike has got a classy motorcycle out there. I wish him all the luck in the world. I would love to see an Indian going down the road and have it keep going down the road.
That's true, Bill, because
I've had some problems.
Yeah, I seem to remember a problem.
Yeah. You know, Harley and Indians at one point in time were like almost even Steven. They raced on the flat tracks together. And let me tell you one of these slogans from the early days. It was, Harley, Harley, made of tin. Ride them out and push them in. Indian was pushing that one. And Harley's response was, if you want to go there fast, ride an Indian. If you want to go there and come back, ride a Harley.
That's true.
So there was a lot of good-natured kidding. And, of course, all the board racing, that was not kidding. That was viciousness out there.
That's
true, a lot
though.
Of deaths, a lot of accidents there, you know.
That's true.
We could have been involved in. Why do you think, I'm going to mess with you here now, but you know, Harley Davidson's a right-hand throttle. Indian was a left-hand throttle.
Yeah.
You know why?
No, I don't, though.
Well, I'm going to tell you why.
Okay. Well, okay, Bill.
The early Harley Davidson Indians, of course, the police departments bought them an awful lot. And most of the people listening to me today are right-handed. There are a percentage of people are left-handed. The biggest majority are right-handed. And because the police departments were buying them in the early days, when you're chasing somebody down on a vehicle and you're going to draw your gun on the bad guy, screwdriver, what hand do you grab your weapon in?
My right.
That's right. That's correct, and that's why Indian came up the left-hand throttle, so you can control the throttle with your left hand and shoot at the bad guys with your right hand. It was like, bang, bang, stop. Bang, bang, stop. That's a true story, though, folks. There, Indian came out left-handed, and also during the wars, they were left-handed throttle, so you could shoot your weapon with the right hand. We mostly lost Indian in the early days because the Harley-Davidson won the war contracts. Indian won a little tiny, tiny contract compared to Harley-Davidson. And during World War II, in case some of you youngsters didn't know, we had rationing. We had gas rationing. We had ladies' nylon rationing. We had rubber rationing. We had recreation vehicle rationing. Indian got such a small contract in World War II, they never really recovered. Harley Davidson, of course, they went to Washington and they paid the senators and the congressmen and they lobbied and they got the fat contracts. If everything was even Steven, we might today be be riding on an Indian. I've always thought that the original Indians were an excellent motorcycle. I've never badmouthed them once. So there you know that. If World War II, if Indian had more contracts, you might be on an Indian today.
That's true, bro. I might be. Not the ones I've seen lately.
The new ones, it's Indian Mike's get out now. You haven't seen them out. I've read reports about them. We haven't seen them. I am not going to share my horror stories with Indian, but they were nice enough to let me test ride many motorcycles. The Power Plus motor, it displeased me. I was disappointed. But aesthetically speaking, I don't think anybody out there can argue with the fact that the Indians are and was a beautiful motorcycle. It looks like a piece of art from a museum, doesn't it?
Right. It does. Absolutely.
Mm. You know, I was talking earlier about the war again. I'll go back into that. It's because we have elected these officials to make decisions. We have to stand behind our officials. If we don't like our officials, it's very easy. Vote them out of office. But for us not to get behind our officials now while they're in the office, we're just slowing ourselves down. And I have no idea what everybody's going to say when we have to tell our grandchildren they're going to have to fight another war. But as Americans, we have obligations. If you don't like the way Congress or the president's running, vote against the person or run yourself. But I'm telling you, it seems like the rest of our lives, America is going to be involved in fighting wars or police actions or whatever the hell we're going to call them now around the world. It's tough for mothers to let sons go. It's tough for fathers, but you and I had to go.
Yeah.
No, we didn't have to go. We made choices to go, you know. But I never understood why we went, except that our leaders said we had to go. That's what we have to go for.
Mm-hmm. That's true, Bill.
We're getting a lot of crazy static with this machine tonight. People are trying to call us, and we got all this stuff up here, and the computer's making noises and crap. I hope somebody can. Did you turn the on switch on?
Yes, I did.
Does the button turn on?
Yes, I did.
All right. I always wonder about that. When people don't call us, I wonder, like, are we like just two lonely old men talking?
I don't know, Bill. I really don't know. Some people said that they had a problem with the sound. I told them to refresh, see what's going on, and I don't see them in the chat anymore.
Mm. There's one person up here, she's saying her grandson, thank you for shutting everything off on me. Her grandson was in Iraq. He's home safe now. Screwed up his arm and will have a medical discharge. I don't want to see a single person come home wounded, crazy, crippled. But we have to accept the fact that for that mother that called in, I say, God bless that your son did come home. Many mothers do not have any sons come home, so I don't know. Now, let me ask you this now. If knowing then what you know now, when it came time for you to go in, were you going in?
Yeah.
That was quick.
Yeah, Bill, because I feel that nobody has the right to tell me what I need to do and how to live my life in my country. Mm-hmm. And we've always helped everybody around the world. But there's a point when you got to say, what the fuck?
So I'm getting more callous now because when I went in, I didn't even think I didn't care. But I'm getting more concerned about the children, grandchildren. I was a draftee, so I had choices. Mexico's just down across the street. Canada's a long way from me, but that wasn't anything I was interested in. First of all, I was 18 years old. I thought I was invincible. I thought, Vietnamese people, little people, what's the big deal? I can be all right. Lucky for me, I ended up doing intel communication in Iran. Never did go to war. But I went in the military when I was drafted. I never went in anywhere. When I was drafted, I went in, and I thought, you know, my father did three tours in Vietnam. My grandfather was in the military. My great-grandfather was in the military. They made careers out of it. I never saw myself as a soldier. I don't see myself as a soldier today. I just didn't fit the mold. But when it was my turn to go in, I didn't doubt it. I did. I got to tell you this, though. You know what really irked me? I was riding my bike. I was up in Northern California, And because I was such a hardcore, tough biker, I had to call my mummy up once a week and tell her where I was at. And lo and behold, I called up, and I was in 29 Palms, California. And my mother said, "You've got a letter from the government." I said, "Open it up, please." I said, "Congratulations, your friends and neighbors have selected you. Now, I want you to know that I thought this for a minute. And I want to know what friends and neighbors selected me. I want to talk to them before I go." But I jumped on the bike the very next day, and I drove straight back down to my mother's home in Carlsbad. My father still was in the military. And they gave me 30 days to get my affairs in order. I was 18 years old. I didn't need 30 days to get my affairs in order. It was the most miserable 30 days of my life because I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't, like, split for months. And they should have just told me 8 days and report. It would have been better for me. 30 days was just too much dead time on me. The only thing about the military I didn't like.
Actually, Bill, when I went in, I signed up on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I started boot camp on Thursday.
Oh, my God. What do you do for 30 days, you know? Well,
I didn't want to wait. The guy told me I took my physical on Monday,
mm-hmm.
went down on Tuesday morning, flew out Tuesday afternoon.
I know after I went to the induction center, and all of us from North County went together, I went through all the basic tests that everybody took, and when they were pushing me on the bus to go to Fort Ord, California, the toughest kid I know, his name was Kent. I hope he's listening. I hope he's still alive, actually. I've not heard from him now in over 10 years. Toughest kid I know, broke into a warehouse, several fights, stabbed one guy in a fight, didn't kill the guy, but stabbed him. Kent was pretty much on the downward slide, and we're just in high school, getting out of high school. They were pushing me on the bus to go to Fort Ord, California. Kent was sitting on the curb with his feet in the gutter, and he was telling me, he was crying. I want to repeat this again. The toughest kid I knew in my hometown here of Carlsbad, California, the toughest kid sitting on the curb, his feet was in the gutter, crying. And I said, "Kent," they're trying to push me on the bus. I'm saying, I'm trying to push them away. "Kent, what's wrong?" He said, "Bill, they won't take me because I have a criminal record."
Not today. Today they'll take anybody.
I got to tell you, I kept thinking, wait a minute. Kent knows how to stab. Kent knows how to fight. Kent knows how to break into warehouses. Why are you taking me? I haven't stabbed anybody when I was 18. Not at 18. And I haven't broken anywhere. And I haven't committed any life crime at 18. They said, "We want you." And to this day, I thought that was the most biggest paradox, that the man who I thought should have gone overseas didn't. And I never heard from him again. And I can only assume, as many of my friends have looked for him, that drugs, alcohol, prison, we don't know, something took him. But I think he would have rather gone in the military and perhaps died fighting for his country. He wanted to do something right. And our government said, no. But we'll take Mrs. Kennedy's boy, Beale, who hasn't stabbed anybody when he was 18, and going to put me in the Army. Oh, my God. I kept thinking. Actually, I wasn't in the Army. I was standing in line. First 50 gave a red tag. Second 50 got a green tag. I was standing with a green tag. An Air Force guy walked by. And I said to him, "What's the difference in the tags?" He says, "Oh, you're green. You're going in the Army." I said, "Well, these guys in front of me, they're going in the Marine Corps." So in 1969, they were drafted Army, Marine Corps, whatever 50 was standing in line. Because I lived so close to Camp Pendleton, I just didn't want to join the Marines. And I didn't want to join the Marines because I was, honest to God, I was afraid that I might get stationed at Camp Pendleton for my 2 years. And I just thought, no, if I'm going to be in the military, I want to go wherever I go. And I felt that if I went to Vietnam, afterwards they might send me to Europe or something with that. So that's how close I can be in the Marine Corps.
That's true, Bill. You know, there's a couple of things, a couple other things going on where some people were sounding off today, and there's one I want to talk about. something somebody was sharing today.
Am I getting you depressed with this military talk, huh?
No.
Just talk about the vets. You sound like you're a little quiet here.
No, not. I don't mean to.
Screwdriver and I are 100% behind our military. Our government, but 100% behind every vet out there. I swear to God on that, folks.
You know, this was sent to, this was sent today, and it was sent. I received the email, and it's out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Bill.
Louisiana.
It says, seems Louisiana's WDUI Vehicular Homicide Task Force on Monday considered ways to toughen enforcement of laws aimed at preventing drunken driving. What, a rapides? Parish judge says he's got all the authority he needs, the U.S. Constitution. The 19th Eastern District Judge Thomas Yeager told a task force meeting that he issues warrants to test the blood of any driver suspected of driving under the influence, if drugs or alcohol, if they refuse to submit to testing, if the test comes back positive, all I have to do is decide on the sentence. Because the test results are the strongest evidence in court. The level of intoxication, which can only be determined by breath or blood testing, is used as a basis for sentencing.
He's got his own formula.
Bill. Some of these guys, some of these judges, man, I don't know where they think they're getting all their power from, but this guy says the state law gives DUI suspects the option of refusing testing, but the penalty, losing their driver's license for 2 years. It's the same if they had flunked the breathalyzer test. So if they refuse, either way, 2 years. Yeager said the Constitution gives him the authority to compel the offenders to provide breath or blood samples if there is sufficient cause for a warrant. Okay, who decides there's sufficient cause? How do they know the guy's not on medication? How do they know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one has ever challenged his authority to secure blood tests by a warrant, the judge said. So far, no other jurisdiction in the state operates the same way, but he said some other states have had it, and at least one jurisdiction, Kalamazoo Parish, is considering it. All those drunks and all those bars need to know if they drink and drive, they're going to go take you to the hospital and take your blood. That goes back to an article that Jan had wrote about, they can stick you to the back seat, tie you up, stick a needle in your arm, take your blood. They don't have to have your permission.
Well, you better be a couple of them before I'll submit to that.
Absolutely.
You know, not that I want to deviate a little bit there, but I was just thinking about Louisiana, all the great people I've met down there. And I want to think that we left once down from New Orleans, and they took me down this great motorcycle run in Gulfport, Mississippi, Louisiana down to Gulfport, Mississippi. I don't know if you had a chance to make that run down there, but that was a great party.
I worked on there for 6 weeks, Bill.
You did?
Yeah, we worked on a ship down there.
You got this thing with ships, don't you? A little strange.
The government sends me different places, Bill.
So I don't want to cause any aspersions on your character, but just you and all these men on the ship, huh?
No. Actually, the ship was in dry dock, Bill.
Oh, okay.
We took out, basically, we went down there to change out the shaft and the propeller. So we put a new shaft to it.
I don't want to be, you know.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm saying, you know, I know you're a very talented man. You do what you do for a living. You support, take care of your family. But, man, this is San Diego. They couldn't find somebody a little closer? Oh, you're so special. We've got to get you all the way down. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, that was part of the warranty, Bill.
Another good reason why people are calling in now and then, are you guys trying to make money off this or that? I've described to you what Screwdriver does for a living. I own Kennedy's Custom. I and my brother Mike Kennedy own Kennedy's Custom Motorcycle Shop. Screwdriver and I are comfortable. We're comfortable with our finances. We don't need to make money off this. What we need to do is to talk to other people out there that are fighting laws, bad laws, and we need to talk to people, see how they get rid of them. Because it took me a very, very long time. It took Screwdriver and I to go in together at the same time, but I'm 10 years old and Screwdriver. It took me a long time before I decided to step up and say, I'm not going to let somebody else do this. We need to make changes. And I mentioned that Screwdriver and I, we're not politicians, we're not lawyers, we're not paralegals. Well, Screwdriver's getting to be a paralegal where we're going. We're two guys that said, in our town, we're going to do the best we can to make it better for all motorcyclists. Everybody in their own town that can hear me, all I'm asking you. You don't need to save the whales, save the planet, save the rainforest. Let's just start in our own little town. If you got bad laws, change the laws.
You know, Bill, I received an email from Rhonda.
Rhonda.
Hey. Yeah, Rhonda is having her.
Rhonda.
She's having her ride in basically Bikers Rights thing at the Daytona this week. Starting, I think it's Sunday it starts?
Yes.
Okay. She sent me an email, and she says to please pray for God's favor. This could be the bridge that is much needed on a local level. It seems that one of her friends had talked to somebody who decided to pitch their event, and they said the story was terrific. Now here comes the always waiting for the sidelines, but I'm not sure how to take this. He told it would be a better story for the main page folks, and he was kicking it up to them. So he would let her know what they say. Basically, I'm listening, but I can't help you. Hopefully, they help her. But she said she's not sure if that means he's sending the story on to its death or whether he was serious, and they may do the story. Time will tell. So she has the rest of the week before the thing starts.
Well, there's venues everywhere. There's free you can get radio, TV.
No.
They have got to give some free publicity out there. What's it called? I'm sorry. Public. Oh, my God, I'm brain dead. They have to get so much free advertisements. Not advertisements. Public announcements.
Public announcements.
PSA. Thank God. Thank you.
PSA.
Radios, television. Go to newspapers. Ask everybody that has a newspaper. Write an article. You've got to keep plugging away at these people here, or they'll just overpower you. I'm looking at these crazy reports up here. I've got a burning desire to call in. Why can't I call in here? How's your sound? We got to take a hammer to this thing here.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong here. Good information on that Sergeant Farmer or Specialist Farmer again. That's good.
That's true. I also put in there for Betsy's site. It's called bikerbits.info. And then there's the news channel that did the story, it's Channel 9. And then there's the communitywalk.com, which shows the shirts mm-hmm. that they've collected so far on the wall. And then there's the veteransvoice.com, Georgia Shoulder Loses Livelihood. And then the one from Jan, who said timefreepress.com, News 2010, January 10th, veterans raise money for, Dade County Soldier.
Okay. Like I said, a lot of people out there need all of our collective help. This gentleman sounds like he really needs it. He needs somebody not to give him a handout, but a hand up. We'll contact our local American Legion. We'll do some homework and research and make sure everything's legit as far as we're concerned. We encourage you to do your own investigation, but if you come across the fact that this man needs help, man, well, what does it take to help a few bucks here or there? This guy wants T-shirts from different states just to show that people care about them.
Right. And the unfortunate thing is we don't have that size shirt. You don't have that size shirt in the shop.
I got some dipstick T-shirt people, but we'll try to get that worked out.
True. And for the people that were listening that I promised I'd send a T-shirt, the bold shirts are coming. The other thing I had here, Bill, was one of our friends... one of the members of, we had him on a couple weeks ago to talk about insurance. It was Mac Henderson.
He was pretty, that guy's pretty knowledgeable.
That's true.
Gave me a lot of good ideas, a lot of questions we talked to my guys about.
He sent a letter to Dianne Feinstein.
That's our United States Senator.
From California. That's correct. And,
Crazy about her.
No, he wrote a letter.
I'm just telling you, I'm not crazy about her.
I'm not either.
All right. Just
okay, you know, it's, she wrote him, thank you for contacting me about an executive order issued by President Obama on the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol. I appreciate hearing the concerns you raised. On December 17th, the President issued an executive order that grants certain privileges for Interpol to have an office in the United States, Bill. In the United States now. It's my understanding that this is not an unusual order. Over 70 international organizations, including the International Committee of the Red Cross and the World Bank, currently have the right to operate in the United States. Why? Can you tell me why?
Apparently, the impression I'm getting is they don't think the CIA can do a good job. That's what I'm hearing, maybe, huh? Interpol has to be started here because the FBI and the CIA can't do the job? I don't think so. Homeland Security. Any of you guys out there hearing me today? You know, I got some good partners in there, former Navy SEALs all in there. Apparently, they're saying you guys can't do the job either. We need Interpol. Well, Dianne Feinstein, United States Senator. Overall, you got a decent track record, but I'm not going to vote for
you. Well, you know, she's the same lady that she was against. She was against concealed weapons, and she has a permit to carry one.
I don't want to do a lot of character assassinations here because I'm not voting for her. She's not. She's not in my realm. I don't care, you know.
So, to get back to that, in the instance, the president amended the executive order issued in 1983 by President Ronald Reagan, which gave Interpol certain rights, including immunity from lawsuits or prosecution for official acts. At the time, Interpol did not have a permanent office in the United States. However, the organization has since opened a permanent office at the United Nations in New York, Bill. President Obama's executive order allows additional privileges which are commonly given to organizations with a permanent location in the U.S., such as, check this one out, immunity from certain tax requirements. Additionally, Interpol has stated publicly they do not operate a police force with the power to investigate crimes or conduct arrests. This remains an exclusive function of U.S. law enforcement agencies.
Guys, they're saying you guys can't do the job. Pay attention.
Interpol provides a centralized location for different countries to share law enforcement information, including, for example, stolen passport records, arrest warrants for fugitives. For further information, I encourage you to visit Interpol's website. I'll put that up there in a minute. I appreciate hearing from you and hope you find this information useful. If you have any additional concerns, please do not hesitate to contact my Washington, D.C. office. Sincerely, Dianne Feinstein.
Well, you know, what I'm reading is they're just compiling information. Why can't we just go on our computer in Washington and contact them in Europe, wherever they're at, and get their computer? Why do we have to have them in our own country? Every day, and I'm not being paranoid, and I'm not trying to be Chicken Little and say the sky is falling, but every day I see this wonderful country that I love changing. Screwdriver and I will be long gone before the real changes come, but I worry about my grandchildren. What type of country are they going to grow up in? Are they going to be proud to say, as you and I are, God bless America? I'm not ashamed to say that. Maybe politically incorrect. I could care less. But every day we seem to be a little getting pushed back into the hole or something. They're investigating us. But I blame that computer since day one. Boy, on the computer, I could get all the tickets I wanted in California. I could just run over to Arizona and get a new driver's license. Took that away from me. Now I have to drive within the realm. I can't move anywhere. I can't go anything. The government knows what I'm doing. I run down to Mexico. Mexican cops go, hey, they don't care I'm there. As soon as I come back into America, I got the computers. They're reading my license plate.
It ain't even
they
that,
They want to know
Bill.
What I'm doing.
It ain't even
cell phones, right?
That's cell phones. Exactly. You think you turning it off is helping you?
Yeah.
It's not. There's a couple of stories about some guys who, one guy had his bike stolen. It was an inside insurance job. And they checked the pings to the calls he was making. And it was from the guy who took the bike to another state. They both got caught for insurance fraud. Off the pings from the cell phone.
If you disconnect the phone, though, they can't trace you if you're traveling, can they?
Take the battery out.
Okay, because there's
a battery out. We were somewhere. We don't want to say where we were, but someone also
saw him make
a call, and then when he was done, he pulled the battery out. You asked him why, and he told you why.
Yeah, I want to make sure that's correct. That this was something that had to be done that it didn't want to be traced. I didn't know about that, which is why I don't have a damn cell phone with me.
And then
unless my wife makes me drag it off,
or she calls me to ask where
that's
you're at.
That's even better. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But The other thing I have, Bill, and one of the last things I have is from Mr. Breeze out of Washington. It's news from Washington.
Mr. Breeze. I like that.
And it's House Bill 2511 addressing motorcycle profiling.
Motorcycle profiling.
That's it. Has been scheduled for a public hearing on Friday, February 26, 2010, at 1:30 in the John A. Cherber Building, Meeting Room 1. This is another step in the historic march of this bill, signed Mr. Breeze. So if you're in Washington and you want to talk about this bill or you want to support this bill, I would...
Tomorrow.
Friday, February 26, 2010, at 1:30 in the John A. Cherber Building, Meeting Room 1.
Now, right now, you and I are being pretty much ignored by our local police departments, but we've been getting reports that they're being pulled over. Our friends are being pulled over.
The police
are bringing the cards out, and they're writing all kind of information down. But we didn't really have this. It was pretty quiet for a while.
That's true.
And you and I were able to, you know, work with the police department and stop bothering us with that helmet crap. But
now they're doing the profiling, Bill. Now they're pulling people over we know and tell them that you're a known associate of the heavy hitter club. And guys are like, what are you talking about? You know, just this weekend somebody called me about using the stuff that I told them what to do.
Right.
And I showed them how to do it.
Yeah.
And they backed off.
If you know your rights, when you're an American citizen, you're in America, you're okay. You cannot panic. You have to have your information, driver's license, insurance, registration. You have to have that. Once you have that, there's really no reason for any more communication. Again, the police are not your friends. If you need to find a friend, go on some dating service or something with them. Give them the information, the three things I told you. When they're done, if they're going to give you a ticket, say, am I free to go? Leave. For God's sake, stop giving out information on you, your friends, and to my good friends that are in the clubs. Answer nothing. Answer nothing. Where's this patch for? I don't wish to talk about that. Where are you going? I'm just out for a ride. Where are you coming from? I'm just out for a ride. Don't give any information out. They don't want to make new friends. But any little spidget, if there is such a word, I don't know, any little tiny grain of information you can give, which may seem insignificant, enough little small pieces, and the picture starts coming together. You know what I mean?
That's true, Bill, because a lot of things that happens is being a member of Bolt, I learned how to fight the tickets in court and play with their rules, use their rules against them.
Exactly.
And
the last thing they expect.
No, and it's a no compromise process, Bill. And you know, fighting tickets in court, and then you know, trying to get things attention to it overturned, as someone typed into the chat room, you know, because we're trying to change the law. Forget it. If it's in there, you and I know that everybody's in cahoots and they all make deals with each other. And, okay, we'll give you this if you give me that. You know, and there's been some chatter all this week about motorcycle rights organizations and what they're doing and how they're doing it. And
well, if all these organizations would, for God's sakes, get over your ego, get over your attitude, sit down and try to work together, it would make it a lot easier on all of us here.
Absolutely, Bill. You know, when I was talking, someone just typed into the chat room when she was on the phone with me. She told anyone listening that she was proud to be a known associate of me.
Well, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. Saying you're a known associate of Screwdriver certainly puts you on a list of a lot of police organizations. Screwdriver and I are just highly mobile. We both have late model motorcycles. We are highly mobile. If there is let's talk about Saturday night. That party up in Upper Harbor Boulevard up in Santa Ana. You asked me about that?
Right.
Santa Ana is not far. It's 70, 80 miles from us. We'll run up for parties there. We'll run down to the border. We have got runs coming up in Laughlin. We've got Yuma Prison Run.
We've got a run to the Angels Roadhouse in Yucaipa in March, though.
So. Yeah. We've got several different motorcycle clubs that are all invited to run. We're highly mobile. Because we're mobile and our pictures are taken in so many different venues, we're being put in a label. But have somebody to say that they were proud to be a known associate, you know what? They could kick your doors and come after you next. And they'll take you to jail screaming, "I'm a known associate of Philip," while they're beating you with batons, all right? You're willing to pay the price. Obviously, you're bold enough to come on here and say, "I'm proud to be an associate." I truly have been accused of the police department of being for so many known associates of so many organizations. I'm telling them I can't possibly be associated for all these people here. And I'm on a list of so many people only because I'm mobile. I'm an American citizen, a returning vet, a long, long time returning vet, many, many, many years. Before I left, I rode the motorcycle. I'm riding the motorcycle. A while back, I went up to a friend of mine, Sugar Bear. He's a custom bike builder. He's 70 years old. He's known
Sugar
Bear
Choppers. Is that on your trip to Comptonville before it got dark?
Compton.
Before it
got
dark. I got
a little bit lost. I went to a lot of people don't know what I'm referring to right now, but I went to the city of Compton where my friend of mine, he's 70 years old, name is Sugar Bear. He owns a bike shop. He's had it for, since he was 20 years old. I was trying to get to his 70th birthday party, and he said, "I better come up because," he said, "I just think maybe I should come up. I don't want to read anything to that," but we came up there. But I'm not familiar with Compton. I'm of Irish Catholic descent. I am white on white on white. I'm up there. Everywhere says, the signs say MS-13. Marasucha, I believe I said that probably incorrectly, 13. I stopped to help those guys. Stopped and I asked them. I said, "Hey, I'm a little bit lost." And they went, oh, yeah, white guy. They gave me direction to get to his place with that. I will go anywhere, and I mean anywhere for a party if I like the people. And actually, there wasn't a whole bunch of white people up there. But so what? There were bikers up there. I will not judge my friends by the color. I'll judge them by whether or not they're men or women. Then they can tell me what color they are. To my friend Sugar Bear, they had a great party. Congratulations. Sugar Bear's got a great, great logo. If it ain't long, it's wrong. I kind of like that idea, you know?
That's true, Bill.
What do we got up here?
Nothing right now. We're just...
What's this up here? They know that... They know the neighbor did it.
They know the neighbor did it, but they can't prove it, Bill.
Going back to farmers. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Because somebody typed in they should check out the pawn shops. Well, they checked everything out, and they've got an idea. But they can't prove it yet, so they're still working on it. It's an open case.
I firmly believe that you need to contact the police department, especially if you have insurance on your vehicles and all that. But we also know that sometimes you have to go outside sources. Somebody has talked to somebody has talked to somebody has talked to somebody. It'll pop up in a bar. It'll pop up somewhere. The local bikers in that area needed a little more research, I think. Start digging a little bit deeper. I think something will slip up. All they need is one little slip, and the piece of the puzzle will all come together. Remember, you bikers in that area, that's your problem. It's your responsibility. This gentleman's going to come home from the war. I hope he's going to come home from the war, and I hope he's going to come home safe. He's going to need a lot of support. I would like to encourage everybody to... maybe have a welcome home party for them.
That's what they're going to do, Bill. They're making a wall of T-shirts and stuff to show support from all across the state. But to go back to what were we talking about, we were invited to that.
Well, we invited to the party Saturday night up at, that's all,
And basically...
it'll
be to celebrate the 81st...
I had stopped going in there. I got stopped leaving that party last time. Oh, my God,
yeah.
I got to tell you, I left that party, and I went up the exit, the freeway entrance, excuse me. There were police up there on the radio calling down to the police on the freeway, gave my name, gave my description, my motorcycle, yada, 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 and my plate number and all that. I went to the bottom. And so many police were lined up in there. I had my policeman waiting to pull me over at my plate number. A fairly decent person, when he found I wasn't drunk and crazy and stupid, decided just to let me go through. Anybody that was drunk, stupid, and crazy, they were arrested on the spot. And I'd asked him, there can't possibly be this much police in the whole state. What is going on? He said, every time this one club gets together, we're concerned about retaliation from the other club. So if you and I go up there again, that's what you got to face. It was I guess I can say this without being sexist. It was a women's club. They all came in cabs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, what are you doing? Well, Bill, we went to the hotel, we checked in, and we saw the cordon of police all around everywhere. We locked our bikes up. We took a cab 1 mile from the hotel to here. We drove right through it. They didn't stop any of us like that. The more I thought about it, I felt that's kind of wussy. But the more I'm thinking, hey, they weren't stopped. They weren't harassed. They weren't beside the freeway for half an hour like I was. As it was, we had a group with us, and we got separated, and we had to go back and pick up all the pieces, because when you ride together, we don't leave anybody behind at all. But the police don't always pull you over on the same block, so they stretch us out in the freeway pretty much, and we had to stop on the freeway until we all got together. That's coming up again...
March 14th, Bill.
March 14th, all right. In the same vein, I mentioned to you without saying names and all that, we say congratulations to a good, good friend of ours who just picked up his prospect patch.
That's true, Bill.
Shane, good luck to you on that. I know you're awful happy what you're doing, but it's just another step, and you get many steps. I hope as you climb the top of the mountain, that shining jewel you seek so much, I hope when you get to the very, very top and you get your full patch, I hope that jewel is still as beautiful and shiny as you want it to be. Sometimes things change. Club life's not for everybody. I hope it's what you want, brother.
And one more thing, Bill. One more thing I wanted to touch on, Bill.
What?
The laminated mural pictures. The laminated mural pictures we received today. They were taken by Larry Petroselli. And if you want to contact Larry, his number is 518-464-8933. He's out of Gilderland, New York, Bill. And they can help you out with any kind of that you need for your pictures. They'll come and take pictures.
Put the picture up so people can see what the stuff we're going to auction off?
I put up the site, Bill.
Okay,
I can't put the picture
on.
No,
just like that. That's right. Just the site. Why do they know that?
It's the Marine Corps TributeBike.com.
Okay. So you got to remember, I don't pay attention to what you're doing while I'm talking at all.
And,
I don't pay attention when you're talking an awful lot either, but go ahead.
No, but this is, this guy is basically...
You're stimulating when you talk. I'm excited, you know.
Basically, this guy, you know, they do the magazine layouts, they do 3-4 page spreads, you know, single mat, double mat, non-glare finish, floating page ad, $20, lamination preservation. It's really I mean, that picture is... When you saw it, what did you think when you saw it?
No, I'm going to tell you right now, I describe how I felt. I felt proud.
Yeah.
I felt proud of the fact that this father paid the price. He lost his son, but he lost his son for what they believed in, and they took this and they made it inspiration for others.
His other son is also in the Marines, Bill.
I didn't know that before.
Yeah.
Older son, younger son, do you know? I'm just nosy.
Older.
Yeah.
And you also, if you go to the Marine Corps TributeBike.com, you can read both the stories. On how he came to do this,
mm-hmm.
and you can read the story on how he felt about
this
after,
machine
after he did it.
Really acting up. Hey, listen, anybody out there, can you type in, is a screwdriver speaking loud enough? Can you hear him okay? We're having a little problem here, too. Anybody let us know what's going on? I know you can say you can hear me because everybody says they hear me, but anybody type in there? Is the machine even on? Oh, that's great. It's black now. We lost everything. Nope, we're back again.
Can you still hear us?
I think we lost everybody. All is well. How's that screwdriver's voice? Is he okay? ask the question one more time. Can you type in, we know Bill's voice is deep enough in there. The screwdriver's speaking a little soft tonight. Can you hear him clearly? Can you type in a response? Oh, here we go. Everybody's fine. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So,
I thought we were all alone in the world.
Yeah.
What's more sad than two old bikers, you know? More sad is two old bikers don't have a motorcycle. I guess that'd be sad, you know?
True.
Okay, earlier I bad-mouthed Haiti. Yeah, I didn't bad-mouth Haiti. I just said take care of American first. I want to tell you that out of the issue of Quick Throttle, that Harley is going to donate bikes to Haiti. Long a company with a very real social conscience, Harley-Davidson has just donated 28 brand new bikes to the government of Haiti to assist in earthquake relief and recovery. The bikes are on the way to Haiti and will remain the permanent property of the Haitian government. Harley-Davidson, he did a good thing there. I'm always complaining we need to take care of Americans first. What happened in Haiti was a terrible crisis. I feel sorry for everybody. I constantly say America, America, America. That's how I feel, but I do feel bad for the other countries. Disaster's a disaster, you know.
That's true, Bill. And you know what? There was something that... It's kind of a funny story, Bill. You know, although this story was originally published in the spoof.com.
Oh, you're not going to. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There it goes. There we go.
Three reporting missing after animal rights activists take war on leather to motorcycle gang rally. Local and state police scoured the hills outside rural Johnstown, Pennsylvania after reports of three animal rights activists going missing after attempting to protest the wearing of leather at a large motorcycle gang rally this weekend. Two others previously reported missing were discovered by fast food workers duct-taped inside several fast food restaurant dumpsters, according to police officials. Something just went wrong, said a still visibly shaken organizer of the protest. Something just went horribly, horribly wrong. The organizers said a group of concerned animal rights activist groups, growing tired of throwing fake blood and shouting profanities at older women wearing leather or fur coats, decided to protest the annual motorcycle club event in a hope to show their outrage at the wanton use of leather in their clothing and motorbike seats. In fact, said the organizer, motorcycle gangs are one of the biggest abusers of wearing leather, and we decided it was high time we let them know we disagree with them using it, and ergo, they should stop. According to the witnesses, protesters arrived at the event in a vintage 1960-era Volkswagen van and began to pelt the gang members with balloons filled with red-colored water, simulating blood and shouting, "You're murderers," to passersby. This, evidently, was when the brouhaha began. They peed on me, charged one activist. They grabbed me and said I looked like I was French, starting to call me La Turine, and duct-taped me to a tree so they could still pee on me all day. I was trying to show my outrage at this man with a heavy leather jacket, and he didn't even care. I called him a murderer. All he said was, "You can't prove that." Next thing I know, he is forced to ride me on the back of his motorcycle all day and not let me off because his girlfriend was out of town and I was almost a woman, Bill. Still others claimed they were forced to eat hamburgers and hot dogs under duress. Those who resisted were allegedly held down while several bikers farted on their heads. Police officials declined comments on any leads or arrests due to the ongoing nature of the investigation. However, organizers for the Motorcycle Corp rally expressed surprise at the allegations. "That's preposterous," said one high-ranking member of the biker organizing committee. "We're having a party, and these people showed up and were very rude to us. They threw things at us, called us names, and tried to ruin the entire event. So what did we do? We invited them to the party. What could be more friendly than that? You know, just because we're all members of motorcycle clubs does not mean we don't care about our inclusiveness. Personally, I think it shows a lack of character for them to be saying such nasty things about us after we bent over backwards to make them feel welcome. When confronted with the allegations of force-feeding the activists meat, using them as latrines, leaving them incapacitated in fast-food restaurant dumpsters, and farting on their heads, the organizer declined to comment in detail. That's just our secret handshake," assured the organizer.
"It's sick. It's sick. You're sick from reading it. People are probably throwing it. Unbelievable. Now we'll tell you about Baker Drive Train. They've introduced a new 5-speed transmission with built-in reverse, said to be geared to all us older senior types that can still manage to throw a leg over the seat and ride. Baker has had such a huge success with its 6-speed training reverse, introduced 2 years ago, that's following with a 5-speed. Seems natural. The bike's getting bigger and heavier. Baker feels us oldsters need all the help we can get. Now, 6 months ago, I went to this club's big anniversary in Los Angeles, and I pulled up, and they wanted me to back in about 5 feet. Two prospects ran up to help me and asked me, do you want us to back your bike in for you? And I didn't know if I should be insulted. I didn't know.
The gray beard, Bill. It's a dead giveaway, Bill.
I told them, no, stay close by in case I fall down and can't get up. Allow me to back my bike in. But Pat Scholder said, two prospects to push my bike backwards 5 feet. So maybe that reverse transmission may do for me. I'm over 6 foot tall, 220 pounds. I can hang, but apparently maybe I should leave the reverse gear more often. What do you think? You think you get a reverse gear, or you think you get a few more years good in you?
No, I got a few years still. I got a lot of years still. We're getting down to the end, and I'm gonna close this out with a song by Baker, Bill.
I could sing if nobody's working tonight.
No, that's okay.
Look at this. Several people requesting where they want Bill to sing. Look at that. Sing Happy Trails, Bill. New York, Bill, sing Happy Trails. Texas, sing Happy Trails. Mexico City, look at this. They're all the same thing. Please sing Happy Trails.
No, Bill, we're not going to sing Happy Trails.
You know what?
We're going to close this out with a song by Baker.
You're just jealous.
It's called Ride.
Desert air feels good on my face. competition.